we've looked at you know, various aspects of writing and publishing, first lines, query letters, talked through people's first books and second books and further on. And we have a very important topic now, which is important to you, I think, whether you have a book out or whether you hope to have a book out, because it's something that you can start working on today, which is making a name for yourself. And being a professional writer, of course, means that that people read you, whether you have a book out or not. And we'll talk about some of the ways that you can begin having maybe name recognition even before you have a book out, because that's certainly totally possible. So I think I'm going to ask each of our panelists to kind of self-introduce a little bit. We'll start down at the end with Justin, and just say just a little bit about what you do, and then we'll dive in deeper here and there as we go through.
Okay, sure. Hi, I'm Justin Taylor. I'm the author of two books, a story collection called Everything Here is the Best Thing Ever, and a novel called The Gospel of Anarchy. I've also edited a couple of books, a short fiction collection called The Apocalypse Reader, and a photo book of photographs of literary tattoos I co-edited with a friend of mine. It was called The Word Made Flesh, Literary Tattoos from Bookworms Worldwide. And I write and I teach at a couple schools in the city. That's me.
I'm Amanda Bullock. I'm the director of public programming at HousingWorks Bookstore Cafe. That means I book and run all of the events there and all of the social media for the bookstore. I'm not a writer.
I'm Kate Travers, and I'm the director of digital business development at Workman Publishing. So I'm charged with focusing on all digital marketing and business development of our major brands, including websites and different social media verticals, and helping to promote our authors through digital means.
Hey, I'm Rob Spellman. I'm the editor of Tin House Magazine and also executive editor of Tin House Books. And we also run a literary festival during the summer in Portland, Oregon, every July.
And of course, by now you know I'm Jeffrey Leppendorf from Council of Literary Magazines and Presses. So I'll start off maybe just really, really broadly with a simple question that I hope the answer will be yes to, or we're kind of done. But can one start making a name for themselves even before they have had a book come out?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in being a good literary citizen. And if you want to live in the ecosystem that is publishing, you need to contribute to it to help it sustain and flourish. And by being a good literary citizen, I mean that you need to be actively engaged. You need to go to readings, you need to put on readings, you need to buy books and journals, and also support your peers. Support everybody who's on your level, because they will rise with you. You know, if you look around in this room 10 years from now, there are going to be some people who are, you know, have risen very high. And if you, you know, everybody remembers who has been there with you when you are nothing, you know, when you don't have anything, you can't get your foot in the door. So if you let other people in the door with you, it really comes back. And there's a really good article in Wired magazine in September about sort of the social economy, the social your I don't know what the exact right term is, but social capital. That if you you know, if you play it forward, it will come back to you, and you can do that in social media as well. It's very transparent. The people on social media who are just self-promoting, if you go on social media and you genuinely promote other people's stuff that you really like, that's much more interesting than promoting yourself. And then when you do promote yourself, then maybe people will listen.
I think I'm going to stay on that topic just a little bit. There is, in fact, a big difference between self-promotion and promoting yourself simply by nature of being a participating member of a larger community. So maybe we just talk about some ways that writers can do that, ways of being, maybe the word is just generous, good community members, that in fact does get your name out, but without you having to say a thing about yourself. What are some ways that folks might do that, think about doing it?
I love that term, literary citizen. That's great, because I think it truly is, doing as Rob described, it's actually engaging in the world of being a writer, but being a writer amongst other writers, and that means going and supporting your local bookstore, supporting your local library, being engaged and know what the things are happening that are local to your community, when it comes to writing, thinking about how your writing can contribute to something more than just you and your platform. You know, I think actually starting from a space or step away from just you yourself actually might be a little bit easier to first conquer this making a name for yourself, this establishment of your platform, just because I feel like writers are always put in this position where they're being asked to promote, but it's really hard to just keep on promoting yourself, and it's not actually that fun. I think like when you do become this literary, you know, citizen or a citizen of your community and engaged in the literary atmosphere there, you actually start gaining a lot more ground just in terms of ideas for how to do future promotions and how to, you know, get your name further out there. So I love that idea of it just your platform actually starting someplace farther than just yourself, but what's around you.
Yeah, I think that was all really well said. It's really obnoxious and obvious when people are just self-promoting. It's not really... there's some people who pitched me the same events like 3 times. And I really like the literary citizen thing too. People notice. We have people at Housing Works who are friends of the store who wrote their novels in the store, and then we did parties for them, and it really does work. You know, get involved with a literary magazine, learn how to promote that maybe before you learn how to...
Yeah, I love the idea. Let's look at Housing Works just a little bit. Yeah. That we've had people, you know, say write their novels in the store.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that those that have done that, that have then had the book published, have graciously thanked you.
They have, yes. It's nice.
And that's going to go a long way, as
yeah.
opposed to... I just wrote a book and you should put an event for me.
That's the thing too, is that attitude of like, you should do this for me. That will never get you anywhere, whether it's a job application or anything. Like, it's what you can do for that organization. And bookstores can do a lot for writers. Like, work in a bookstore if you can. Like, learn how bookstores work. I think that's worked for a lot of people. But yeah, never, as a person who gets pitches and things like that all the time, don't be like, I bestow upon you my reading. That's not going to work.
So, or even, in fact, drink your coffee in a bookstore that has a coffee bar.
Yeah, like, know who you're talking to. When you're trying to get other people to do things for you, it's really simple, and so many people don't do it. I've gotten pitches for other stores also.
So, Justin, let's go to you as a writer.
Yeah.
Prior to having had a book come out, what are some ways that you perhaps were... being a literary citizen, participating in a way that people, when the book did come out, were able to say, oh yeah, I know that guy.
I mean, you know, when I first moved to New York, which was to start the MFA program here at the New School, you know, Chris Beha and I were here at the same time, it was really exciting just to be in a place where there were real live writers. I mean, I grew up in Florida, and you didn't see that many. I mean, they were all sort of mythical creatures, and you know, and so the idea to me that you could go out and go to these readings, you know, 4, 5, 7 nights a week and hear these people and meet them and get them to sign their books and maybe even, you know, meet other aspiring writers and throw your own readings and, you know, I mean, it was just, I loved it. You know, it was really exciting and new to me. And so I was very, very, as active as I possibly could. I just wanted to be everywhere and see everything you know, and send my stuff out, and it was fun for a long time. But then I guess a couple of things happened. I mean, one is I think that once the novelty wears off, I guess the next question that you start to ask yourself is, you know, what do I actually want out of this? I mean, writer is such a broad category. You know you want to be a writer, and that's fun to say for 18 or 20 or 23 years, but then but when you actually show up and start doing it, it has to take some kind of specific form. I also want to sort of endorse this idea of literary citizenship, but I want to say that you can't, you know, even though the literary community is small, there's still different facets of it, and there, you know, you can't spend equal amounts of energy everywhere, and eventually you sort of have to figure out where you think you fit in or what you're interested in doing, and sort of conserve your energy, whether that's, you know, how many nights you're out or whether it's the kind of stuff you're writing or where you're sending it. And I think it took me a few years to kind of figure that out, that maybe, you know, as I was getting older and also going through the writing program and developing my, learning how to develop my craft, that I kind of realized I wasn't necessarily the kind of writer that I thought I was when I started. I don't know, so I'm not sure where, this is going, but I think what I'm trying to say is that there's, I think that at the individual level as writers, a little bit of ambivalence or skepticism about one's own project can actually be very healthy, because you want to get your name out there, of course, but I think it works best and is the most satisfying when it's kind of in the terms that Rob was describing, in terms of finding a peer community, people that you're interested in working with, reading and being read by, and sort of aspiring together. To just go and be, to give readings in as many reading series as possible or sort of, just use those awful online submission managers that enable you to sort of carpet bomb, every magazine in creation as soon as you wrote something this afternoon and now it's out the door. I mean, I think those things can really be kind of pernicious, not just because they waste editors' time, but because as a writer you're wasting your own very precious energy. And so,
And that's why we haven't yet. I'll utter it now. We haven't yet uttered the ugly, horrible word marketing. But in essence, this panel is kind of about marketing yourself. But the difference, I think, between icky marketing and the kind of marketing that we are talking about, which is a positive thing, which is allowing people that would love to read you to know about you, is that it's a two-way street. It's not one way. And when it's entirely one way, you're just telling people that they're supposed to read you. That gets pretty boring pretty quickly, particularly if some of those folks are writers themselves. I have a good friend who's a fairly successful writer, and I every so often will see him at a reading, and I've noticed something over the years. I have never been to a reading where he has not purchased a copy of the book and had the writer sign it. Now, not everyone can afford to do that at every single reading, but you can still go up and say, "Hi, that was a really great reading. I really enjoyed it." And it just makes you someone who is participating as a reader who is also a writer, and I think it's actually so easy. Such a no-brainer, and so many people, even if they do go, I know, again, you all tend to be nearly empty front row, you all tend to be kind of shy as literary writers. But that's a place to not be shy, to just be a gracious reader as well as a writer.
Yeah. And it works on social media as well. I don't know about you, but the only way that I actually pick up something to read is if someone who's not invested in it recommends it to me. If the publisher recommends it to me, I'll be like, if they're genuinely enthusiastic, like super, like beyond, I might be interested. But if someone with no investment whatsoever says, "Oh my God, have you read Maggie Nelson's Bluettes?" And like what I'm doing right now, Maggie Nelson's Bluettes, amazing freaking book. It's Wave Books, it's a small publisher out of Washington. Incredible book. And enough people recommended it to me that I'm like, oh yeah, great. And so, proselytizing for things that you really believe in just sort of, gets you out there as a genuine human being, and I firmly believe that it'll come back to you. And once you start, once you start putting the word out that you're going to do your own reading, hopefully people will spread the word for you too.
Let's talk a little bit about social media. Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Pinterest. Am I leaving out major ones?
Foursquare.
Yeah. Friendster.
Yeah. MySpace.
Yeah.
poker face tomorrow, whatever. So Kay, why don't I ask you, because this is your world, maybe just some basic etiquette to kind of suggest to folks who are already active. I should say, I think it's sort of a truism. You know, there's all kinds of things you can do. You cannot do all of them. And nor should you do all of them, and you never ever want to be obnoxious. Honestly, most of you, again, probably erring on shy, or probably are incapable of doing too much. That said, it's easy to do it wrong if you are in a phase of actively promoting something. So you have a book that's just coming out. We're at that point. What would be some sort of do's and don'ts for putting out words about it through social media?
Sure. Well, you know, once you're at the point of actually of that book being put out, or it's just recently been published and just getting the word out, I think you've already done a tremendous amount of work on social media to have already a lot of connections in the literary community. So you've already been working on your Facebook or your Twitter, you know, profiles for a very long time, I would say at least a year. And, you know, you've been engaging with others through it. You've been engaging with other authors through those sites. You've been going to those authors' websites and seeing their sample chapters. And I would say, actually, the thing that's been really working for me and my authors lately, and something I've just seen as a shift to something that's really being picked up in social media, is when you provide extra content. It's not a new concept. I've done it before with plenty of my authors, but being able to really have that sample chapter or have some interactive feature about your characters, or, you know, to be able to provide something on your website that you can point to that could be something that would be illustrative in some kind of way.
Even behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like with Cheryl Strayed, who is really good at fostering community on her various social media, because she always posts pictures of, like, who comes to her meetings, or, you know, it just, I mean, it's,
yeah,
like, if you feel like, especially with her,
yeah,
you feel like you're on the road with her. Oh, Annie Lamont is at your meeting, how cool.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. It's stuff like that. It's actually really interesting, because I have a lot of authors who, you know, just keep on throwing the same ideas against the wall, which is, you know, I will be appearing at so-and-so bookstore at this time, please come out, you know, and you have to do that. You have to talk about where you're going to be appearing, for sure, but there's nothing really engaging about that in any way. What is that telling a complete, you know, friend of a friend who happens to be in the area about your book and why they would be interested in it?
Maybe, actually, let's stick on that one a little bit, and anyone can join in here, too. Let's say you are going to be doing a reading in a bookstore. What kinds of things might you be tweeting or et cetera that would not just be, hey, I'm here next Tuesday? What would be some maybe ways of saying that, but perhaps putting something else out there that would be of interest to anyone that's already knows this from you?
I mean, there really is only so many ways you can say, like, I'm going to be at the bookstore at 7 p.m. or whatever. But if you're going to be doing something extra, like I think the extra part is important. And also, doing all the social media for HousingWorks, it's really, whenever possible, like I said, there's only so many ways we can say, like, we're closing at 1 today. But do different things on the different platforms. Don't feed your tweets to Facebook. If I wanted to follow you on Twitter, I would follow you on Twitter, and your Facebook should be different. Like, maximize each platform. And we also have a wonderful relationship with Tumblr, and Tumblr's really doing a lot to reach out to writers right now. So if you're not on Tumblr yet, give that a try too. And have fun with it. Don't just talk about, like you said, like what bookstores you're going to be at. Like,
yeah.
Talk
also
about things that aren't books. If
yeah,
you're
also
really
engage.
Into Dungeons and Dragons, like
yeah,
talk
yeah.
about that all the time. Like, I talk about whales all the time on Housing Merchant Store.
What we do too is,
I didn't really answer the question. Sorry.
Well,
but
when we go out, like when we have readings in foreign cities, sometimes we do, like, hey, where should we eat? You know, I'm going to be reading at Elliott Bay. Where should I go for breakfast? Or, you know, I have an afternoon to kill in Seattle. You know, what
mm-hmm.
should I see? I've never been to Seattle before.
Correct.
You know, just engage with your community.
Yeah, things like that have ones that have struck me that seemed, it's not that someone's being clever or tricky. I mean, the ones that strike me are the ones that seem real. But I thought, well, how great that they were able to mention the reading without saying I'm doing reading at Sadness. So, you know, after my reading next Tuesday, I'll be going over to whatever great bar I just heard about. Please join me if you can be there. You know, it's still putting it out there, but it's not exactly just you have to come hear me.
I think also, and I don't know, you can probably speak to this much better than I can, but I used to work in an independent bookstore and was focused on programming there, and something that I loved was when the authors brought someone to be in conversation with or to have some kind of musical element, you know, playing like before the reading or something that kind of made it more than just like a straightforward reading. And usually, you know, the curator at the bookstore will have something to say about that, but I think it's certainly, you know, something that's nice as part of an approach if you can be in conversation with one of your colleagues in the literary community that you've already established your relationship with, and to have something so that you're bringing more than just a straightforward reading and making it kind of a bigger event night. And again, that is working with the bookstore manager and programmer to see if that kind of thing works. But I've seen it more and more just something that's interesting, because then the musicians people come, or this other author's people come, and you're like-minded, and it just creates more people in the door, because frankly, I think you really have to put yourself in a bookstore owner's, you know, shoes, that, like, you know, staying open an extra hour for a signing is paying employees extra to stay, you know, and there is like a business behind it, and you have to be selling books as part of your reading.
Let me ask, leading up to that point then, for back to the folks that don't yet have a book out and maybe trying to establish a kind of presence on social media, who are new to it. Let me ask, who here is, would call themselves active on some kind of social media? Yeah, so not even really the majority. Okay, so this would be a good question to answer. For those that are not yet active and would like to be and are thinking about their future of being a published writer and want to be genuine, but what are some things they might try to put a little emphasis on that might help in them building being part of a writing community through social media, where they might not be in a place where they know a lot of other writers yet?
I think, well, Twitter is the easiest, I find, because you can, like, if you follow me, like, just Rob Spillman, go to my Twitter feed, and then you'll see all the lists I have. And I have various lists of, like, different, you know, writers writing bookstores. I mean, you just go to any one of our Twitters, and you can go to the list, and then you can wholesale follow the list. And then it's really easy to get, and then you'll just, you get into a rhythm of seeing what's out there, and then you can start playing it forward. Like, if there's someone you really, really like, and they're reading here, you know, say, hey, you know, I love this writer. If you haven't read this book, it's great, and you should go see her at Housing Works next week. It's a really simple
thing. Yeah, it sounds like it's sort of giving shout-outs.
Yeah.
It's a really easy, free, generous thing to do. And of course, if you really mean it too, then that's
yeah, if you're like tweeting at like 20 people in a row being like, I love your book, people are going to notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in general, and like, don't, if you really are turned off by Twitter, like, don't do Twitter. Do mm-hmm. something else. You know, I love all of it except Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you want to just pick one and kick ass at it. And talk about lots of different stuff. Just be yourself. If you're a writer, you probably have a voice, so use it.
Yeah, it took me a long time to figure out in the early days of Twitter how to use it correctly, because I would say I was like a perfect example of how to use it incorrectly. I was helping to promote my authors, and it would be like, so-and-so got a great review in the LA Times, and then have the link, and, you know, and it just was not engaging at all, but it was doing my job and spreading the word in the way that I thought I needed to. And I'll never forget, I was in line at Whole Foods on Union Square, and it was a really long line. I was really tired, I was really just frustrated, and I saw a mouse,
And I tweeted it. I was like, mouse spotted, Union Square, Whole Foods, gross. And I got like 50 retweets. Like, I got like tons of people engaging, tons of people like, oh my God, I hate that store. You know, like people who were following me probably from the literary community just because I was following them. You know, like, I don't know. Like people who were just, who I was not engaging with before. And it was just, it was such a clear and present lesson for me about being authentic and being who I really am and talking about life and putting, you know, what we're doing in the context of what is happening right now in real life. So I love that idea of, you know, if you are going to, you know, be planning something and an event or even just attending an event, just as a regular person, another writer supporting another author, that's a really nice thing to do, to be able to put out there and to talk about the local restaurant. And I'm not saying this just because I'm like a big shop local person. I'm saying it because I saw what happened with that tweet and I've never forgotten it. And I've always taken that as an example. When I see that I'm doing promotion on social media and it's not working, it's usually, I have to check my motivation. I have to like see like what is it that I'm putting out there and what kind of way am I doing what I was doing before? And it's a constant like having to check myself because social media moves really fast. We have a lot of stuff to promote. But the reality is people are not interested in being sold to in that kind of way, even if you're talking about fabulous literary fiction. I could be talking about toilet paper. It's not interesting if I put it out there in that way.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like a catalog or just think about the ways people can get information and I don't know, especially as a person on Twitter instead of a business, instead of a store or a publisher or something like that. Anyone who's following you is going to follow you because they're interested in you. If they wanted to know where you were reading, they would just go to the events page on the website. So you can use it for that, and they're interested in that too. But yeah, just...
Let me ask you, if, let's say you managed to put out something... even unintentionally very clever and compelling that other people are retweeting.
Everyone just tweeted this on Mouse. And
yeah, exactly. It pops up somewhere. What can you do then to maximize that having happened? Should you be following the people that retweeted you? Do you send them a thank you? Do you let it happen?
Definitely. Okay. I mean, maybe not with the mouse thing, but overall, you
like
always
exterminate.
Like, yeah, totally. No, but that was, it was again really eye opening to me, and that is something like manners. Remember your manners, like you were a little kid. But social media is just as meaningful. Like always, thank someone for retweeting you. You know, always, you know, do a shout out back, you know, as long as it's appropriate, and it probably is appropriate, it's really, really important to, you know, support that person who you're engaging with and that outlet you're engaging with. And again, that's why, like, without prompting, you know, if you're so inspired, I mean, everyone is here because they're inspired, right? So take that and start promoting what you're inspired by. Start out with that, and then the rest will follow.
Yeah, and I also, you can, your tangential weird interests, it's a great place to indulge them. Like Moby Dick, you know? We're gonna go do a marathon reading of the entire book next weekend at three different venues, including Housing Works. And, you know, I have no financial investment in this whatsoever. It's just I like Moby Dick, and it's, you know.
Yeah, you guys shall come. I organized a marathon.
Yeah, she organized.
You should all be tweeting that right now.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. But
yeah,
it's one of those completely frivolous, useless things that we all love to do. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, there's nothing. But this is, Twitter and Facebook are great for that. And there's like, it's obvious that there's no ulterior motive to it, except for a whole lot, like 100 different people getting together to read Moby Dick.
There's actually a couple of the readers are people who just tweeted at the Moby Dick NYC Twitter and like, can I read? And so, you too could someday read in a Moby Dick marathon. If you learn how
that,
to
that's a great
media
example of, like, you also, you know, I'm meeting people because of this too. I mean, it's just like mutual admiration society of, you know, Melville.
Yeah,
and I feel like we're talking about Twitter a lot because it's really easy and it's pretty accessible, but And Facebook's honestly kind of on its way out, so I wouldn't. Facebook's you can't do, it's so annoying these days. Like, you have to pay to be promoted. I don't know, as a business, as an individual, it's probably different, but as a
also, I'm getting pitched a lot.
Really annoying.
I'm getting pitched on Facebook.
Yeah, don't do that. Like, find someone's email address. Going back to the pitching promotion.
I should say another one I didn't mention, which is maybe in a separate category, but when we talk about how effective it might be, I can say I know it has been for some people on Goodreads.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
some
love
other
Goodreads.
Sites where people basically are only talking about books and reviewing books. And, you know, this is available to you also just through Amazon. Maybe we can talk about, is it useful to review other people's books?
I often can't because of my job. If I don't like a book, I could still host that author. But before I had my job, I was very active on Goodreads. And again, there was a person who I won't name who was very actively like bugging people on Goodreads to read his book before it came out. It ended up being published by someone, but in this really annoying way. But there are good ways to go about that and to like recommend the book to someone.
Yeah,
on
I would
there.
Think if instead he had simply been writing a lot of good reviews and
exactly.
people were following him on Goodreads to read his reviews, and then he said, "Hey, by the way, my book's about to come out."
Yeah, it's like got good intentions, or I think that again back to that literary citizenship thing, like. Everyone knows when they're being sold to, and marketing isn't a bad word, but just pursue your actual interests and use your actual voice.
Yeah, it's really
and
transparent when someone goes on Facebook just to promote. I mean, like, you know, they just join coincidentally when they have a book out. And they're like, oh, hey, welcome to Facebook, and here are all my readings. You know, it's like,
Yeah, I mean, talking about review, I mean, you can review people's books on Goodreads, on Amazon. There's a lot of, you know, there's literary blogs that people get involved with. I mean, I was one of the founding bloggers on HTML Giant, and I did that for a couple of years. And that was really helpful in certain ways. I think it did raise my name recognition to a certain degree, at least in certain spheres. I know that when it came time to, after my editor was interested in buying my first book and he had to take it to the marketing department, you know, that fact gave him something to talk to them about. You can hear the tone of my voice change a little bit when I say that because it's not, doesn't make me happiest in the world, but it is a fact and it is worth being aware of. But at the same time, you know, I wound up doing that because the person who'd asked me to do it seemed like an interesting guy, Gene Morgan. He'd run this website called Bear Parade that I was really interested in when it first started. Had been submitting my own work to without success for some time, and then he asked me to do this thing. And so I did it. It was about 12 of us, and I said, "Yeah, you know, we'll give this a try." And it was really a lot of fun, and I met a lot of people, and you know, and for a minute it really felt like that website kind of had the whole literary community's attention, which was a really great feeling. But then two other things happened, which led me to kind of walk away from that. The first one was that I think after a couple years of sort of growing and expanding, I think HTML Giant found its voice and figured out what it really was. And I felt like it was something that didn't really leave me a place to participate. The site's done a lot of different things, but mostly what it's done over the past few years is it has one sort of crew of people that are deeply invested in avant-garde literature, kind of conceptual fiction, you know, postmodern stuff, and they write about it relentlessly. And then there's also a sort of older crew over there that their taste is a little more traditional. They do a lot of like MFA kind of service-y talks and thinking about, you know, I don't know, you know, ask like, you know, the kind of the other side of the spectrum, and both those things are valuable, and the site does, you know, very well for itself, but neither of those things were anything that I really wanted to. I didn't see a role for me in either of those factions, and I didn't, after 2 years of blogging, I didn't see an end anymore in forging some sort of third prong of what that blog would do. The other thing that happened, you're talking about reviewing and social media and stuff, is that, again, you know, as I sort of tried to figure out what kind of writer I thought I was and who I wanted to be, I decided I was really interested in writing, that my nonfiction would take more of the form of essays and full-length book reviews when possible, and that I was interested in doing kind of stuff like that, which meant teaching myself how to, you know, write a pitch letter, learn the house style at different places. And I felt that as good as HTML Giant had been to me and for me, it was teaching me to be a kind of writer I didn't want to be, which is someone who has a half an idea and knocks out 200 words about it and finds a funny picture and posts it, and that takes half an hour. And then you spend the next 7 hours fighting with your own fan base in the comments section about, you know, who's a jerk and who's Hitler and this and that. And I really, you know, some people are really good at that. And I just felt like, one, I wasn't that good at it, and two, I didn't want to be better at it. I wanted to be better at something I wasn't doing because I was spending all my time doing that. And so I started putting my energy into, you know, it was a very conscious decision. I said, I want to publish less nonfiction, and I want to do kind of bigger pieces. You know, I want to write, I want to learn, you know, how do you write a kind of essay review that takes on two or three or four books at once and has a kind of, you know, through line and a thesis. I don't know how to do that. And it took a while to figure it out. But in order in your own life to kind of carve out the space to, you know, to teach yourself that or to try, you have to give something else up. And you have to do that, you know, you have to give the thing up before you get the new thing. And for me, you know, that was blogging, and it was, you know, certain other aspects of web publishing and whatever.
So if you saw blogging initially as kind of a stepping stone to what you really wanted to do, but...
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
let me ask you this one. When you, at the time that your first book was sold, were you blogging at that point?
Yeah, I was still associated
with
blogging.
So then the follow-up question is, and was that in any way a sort of marketing point for you, for your agent? You know, to say, oh, he already has a following on this blog, or do you think it didn't matter?
You know, I don't think my agent or my editor were particularly interested in that. I think that it helped get the marketing department's attention for a paperback original book of short stories with really no major publication behind it, no Best American. You know, I'd written 15 stories. I think, you know, about 10 of them had been published, maybe half in, like, very small online journals and a couple in, you know, good magazines and journals, but smaller places. I mean, you know, Canteen, The How Journal, you know, which is a great magazine. But, you know, not New Yorker debut, you know, whatever you want to say. So I think that, so at that level, I think it helped. But then it kind of went away again. I mean, when it actually came time to promote the book, you know, I didn't do any self-promotion on HTML Giant, even though I obviously had the code or whatever, you know, I had the access, nobody would have stopped me. I forget if any of the other bloggers on there kind of mentioned it or acknowledged it in some way. They may have. You know, I don't know. But it just sort of went away.
Let me ask this too. For the journals that had published the original, had been the original publishers of mm-hmm. some of the short stories, when the book came out, were they reached out to let folks know that something they had published was now in a book, or were they asked to do that? You know?
I don't know. I mean, there. You know, I mean, those. I mean, like the Canteen and How. I mean, just the two. Use those two examples. I mean, their editors are really wonderful people, and I'm sure that if it occurred to them, they would have tweeted or you know maybe just told their friends or whatever. But I don't think it was any kind of like concerted
right.
thing.
I know that when I've been publishing Tin House for 14 years now, and I like to view my writers as sort of part of the Tin House community. And so when something good happens to them, I want people to know about it. So if there's someone, you know, someone like Justin Torres, who was a scholarship student at our festival and first published in Tin House, when his book got published and he got in the New Yorker, I was writing like crazy about it, you know. I was really excited and happy for him. And that was not a Tin House thing, and New Yorker is not the Tin House, but, you know, it's just, you know, I'm very happy for him. And he, in turn, gives shout-outs to Tin House when he's on the road,
you know.
Yeah, I would think in general, I mean, I would just say to you next time you should let everyone know. I don't think it's asking them to do you a favor. You're actually doing them a favor because they're getting to say, look, someone whose story we published now has a book. I think they'd be thrilled to have that one more, you know, scalp edge.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the nature, you know, of the enterprise. I mean, it was, you know, my first book of fiction, and I didn't really, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I know I sent out an email blast at the time, you know, like everyone I'd ever met, and the other decision that I'd made when the book was coming out was that I had decided that I was going to say yes to everyone who asked me to do something, whether it was the biggest place or the smallest place. I had decided going in that, you know, if they were taking the time to be interested in me, I would respond to them. And so I wound up doing some very small, weird things. This very strange website, whose name I can't remember now, it's some kid's blog, but it does this thing called the page 69 test. You turn to page 69 in your own book and then read what's on that page and then write about why, you know, it's okay. So I did that, sure. You know, and then like some other things happened that were good. I mean, you know, the Times reviewed it, which was a very big surprise. And then I got to write a thing for their blog. They asked me to do that. And so obviously that was really exciting too. You know, but I wouldn't say no to the first guy because the second guy called. But, you know, with a different kind of project, it's different. I mean, you know, Rob, you know, who edits a magazine or, you know, if it's in a fiction anthology, I mean, if you're in capacity as editor or, you know, like even at the bookstore, where it's not your own work, you're sort of rallying around the work of other people, you know, then it becomes much easier in a way, because you're promoting obviously a product that you're invested in, but you're speaking on behalf of a group. I mean, you know, I'm sure Rob loves his magazine, and the better it does, the better he does. But he really has a duty to the people in it. You know, the people that gave him work, and I'm sure that must. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd probably be better talking about that, but that must inform his approach. I mean, like when I edited the short fiction anthology, or when I did the photos, people's tattoos, even, you know, then we would put on these events. You know, you'd get 3, 4, 10 contributors, and have them all bring their friends, and then you can just get up there and go, you know, this is really awesome. You know, Brian Evanson wrote this short story and he gave it to me in this book, and I'm here to tell you, you know, this is it. You know, it's a lot easier, and in a way, it feels a lot better to say that then I wrote this short story, and this is, you know, you kind of hope that people will sort of figure that out on their own.
Let me ask you to switch gears a little bit. When for authors to be reading for an event at the store, is it generally the publisher approaching you, or do writers approach you?
It depends. It depends kind of on who the publisher is. Also, a lot more and more, I think authors are being asked to do that themselves.
Right. And so the question is: so when the writer is doing it.
Yeah.
And you don't know them already.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for?
Going back to what Kate said earlier, we don't really do like single author, I'm going to read, answer some questions, and sign my book kind of thing. There are places for that. I'm not saying like that is like evil or anything. But it's a big store. We hold 300 people, and we want to get 100 people in there. That doesn't mean, but then also we're all donation nonprofit, so we're not doing like a lot of big launches and stuff where it's really important for people to sell books. So we have this kind of space in between. So there's no-brainer stuff, you know, like when Stephen Elliott from The Rumpus is like, oh, I got these 10 awesome people to do letters in the mail. I'm like, yeah, whatever, like right. Anytime you want. But we did, one of the examples I use a lot is these two poets. Kate Messner and Tishon put out a book like a year ago called The Letters All My Friends Have Given Me, I think was the name of it. And they sent me a really nice pitch letter. I could tell they'd been in the store. They addressed it to me, which, like, again, this sounds so like, this is how you write your resume. But it's true. It makes a big difference. And they had sent like a sample poem but they didn't go over the top. Some people are like, here is a PDF of my book. And I'm like, that's awesome. I'm not going to read it.
Right.
And it was really heartfelt. And they were also, they weren't just like, you know, I bestow my poetry reading upon you. Seriously, you would not believe it. They wanted to do an event that brought in some of their friends and brought in musicians, one who happened to be someone I knew. And a larger event like celebrating their work and with their work as the anchor, but also bringing in sort of opening acts.
That sounds like a really good approach.
Yeah, and it's that cross-pollination thing too. Like if it's just one smaller person, we're not going to get 100 people in the door. And even though we're nonprofit, we're focused on fundraising, and I really do, people like, stores are businesses, like we were saying earlier, like we want to support the community and we definitely do things that we know are only that. But the more, not that you should have like 20 people reading or whatever, but the more different angles you can come from, the better. And it was great. It was a great reading. And there were a bunch of people there. A couple other times, things like that have happened. This really tiny lit mag harlequin creature approached us. It's beautiful. They were really great. I really wanted to do something with them. But their magazines are produced by hand. People type them, so they cost like $50. And I was just like, this isn't going to work. You're going to have to bring in some other people. So they joined up with two other lit magazines. And again, we had readings and music, and it was great. And so there's the DAW stuff. Like if you can get on board with someone who is a friend of the store that you know we're going to say yes to, you know, that's good. But there's also ways to get in there as a smaller name who I might not have heard of before.
It sounds like sort of just ganging up with other folks who have books coming out that you may, maybe from your program or that you know.
Yeah, or yeah. And a lot of it, like I said, it's so easy, but like, say like it's like applying for a reading, you're not applying, but pitching a reading, you're applying for a job in a certain way. And whenever you're applying for a job, it's always like, what you can do for them, not what they can do for you.
I think a lot of, go ahead.
Yeah, we do a lot of events at bars and places like that, and bars, all they care about is selling drinks. And if you can go to a bar and say, I'm going to bring 50 people, and, you know, we will buy 2 drinks each, and we're going to come at a dead time. We're going to come from, like, you know, 5 to 7 on a Tuesday night. They're like, yes. So, you know, get together with 5 other people, and they all have to bring 10 people, and you've got a reading.
Well, yeah, and there's readings in really interesting places. I mean, Franklin Park reading series is one of the best examples. Like, Panina Rothman's that. She does a great job. It's one of the best. I'm sure you've all heard of it. But
it's Monday nights in Crown Heights.
I think it's the first or second Monday of the month.
Yeah,
I think it's
awesome.
This Monday, actually.
It's packed.
But it's
very
at a bar.
Community-based.
That's,
yeah,
like, the only literary thing that they do. And there's a lot of that kind of stuff in unorthodox venues. That is really interesting, and I love going to that kind of stuff, like readings that I probably shouldn't be saying this because I've run readings at a bookstore, but readings not in a bookstore.
Yeah,
are
my
really
favorite
great.
Readings are collaboration. I do a lot of collaborations with other either musicians or other magazines. I love partnering. I do a lot of things with like One Story and Public Space and Bomb, other Brooklyn magazines, because we're very much a community and we have some overlap with writers. And it's much easier to bring in a crowd if you collaborate with other.
And I think, being in the publisher position, I am always really, really careful to only put together events, and approach a space, whether it's a bookstore or another venue, if I have a full program ready to go. Because I want to keep my relationship really good with that venue for future author events. So it's really a collaborative effort across the board.
And sometimes stuff comes to me that's, one book, one author that sounds interesting, and you can push it out and like kind of get them to go a little farther. But I think the original question was whether it's authors or publishers, and it's a combination.
Yeah, I wanted to know if it can be an author, it can be.
Yeah, it can be.
Is an author, what do they need to bring to the table? And it sounds like largely an idea that's going to, not just that their work is great, because but that they can guarantee, or at least mostly kind of guarantee, that there'll be some minimum crowd there.
Yeah.
Because you are keeping a building open with employees in it, and it needs to be lit up. For a commercial bookstore, that's really what they need to know. They need to know that you're going to bring a certain number of people. So that's this whole idea of having sort of platform or following is very important to be able to demonstrate, because you are probably, it's your first book, let's say, you're not really a known quantity yet.
Well,
so the fact that your name is on a poster in a bookstore isn't enough to draw a crowd if there are events several nights a week at this bookstore.
Yeah, and one of the great things about New York is there are tons of events every night, and so you can be going to them. And this, I think, goes back to the supporting your peers thing that Rob was talking about. Like, if you go read with your classmate who 2 years later is like famouser than you, and then they need some, you know, I don't know, or musicians or whatever. But if you're okay with being out there, be out there. Yeah.
Let's back up a little bit again and just some basic stuff. I don't know if we really mentioned this so far, at least today, but generally, frequently, maybe even all the time, when you're published by a press, when you're taken on by a press, something they give you is an author questionnaire, and it asks a number of things, and authors are often sort of put off by getting one of these things, because they ask you questions that have to do with marketing. How many people are on your mailing list? Are you a member of an alumni association? Are you active on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, etc.? And you know, are there cities where you can stay, where you might go and basically off on your own and do a reading tour? All these various kinds of questions are on these questionnaires, and authors are often upset to see this because they think, well, I thought you were supposed to be marketing my book. Why are you asking me all these questions? And the answer that publishers generally give is, well, who could possibly know your reader better than you? So we need to ask you first who you think your ideal reader is, and then we'll take it from there a bit. But that said, you know, publishing is, as we said, a partnership process. You do need to take a part in it. And there are all kinds of networks that, again, you may already have and don't realize it. For example, you graduated from some place, and there's an alumni network, and simply letting them know you have a book is a pretty simple thing to do, and they'll be thrilled to let everyone else know about it. And someone who went to that same school might be thrilled just to know that a classmate wrote a book. That might be enough for them to want to read it,
yeah.
Topic aside. Mm-hmm. So maybe a few other sort of basics like that that people maybe forget about, networks they may have already that they can let folks know about once they have something or are in the works of having something.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way for a publisher to know that, you know, these are my favorite bookstores. I have relationships. I bought a ton of books at this bookstore or that bookstore. I mean, these are just kind of simple, obvious things. But I think the author questionnaire for us is kind of a litmus test of, are you willing to get in the van and go on tour? You know, because that's what it's indie rock. You know, because we will send you anywhere on the planet if you're willing to get in the van. You know, that means if you offer yourself, like, you know, I will go to 20 cities and read in parking lots, and we're like, great. You know, here's your gas money, and we will do whatever we can to get the word out. Because it's, you know, if you're willing to do that, that's really gonna help. I've got to say, just my best author questionnaire ever was for an art book. By a guy named Zach Smith. He did a drawing for every single page of Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow. It's an 800-page art book. I saw it in the Whitney Biennial, and I turned it into a book. And so I sent him an author questionnaire, and he kind of looks like a gutter punk. He has a big red mohawk, and it's in the permanent collection of the Walker Art Center. So he's like, straddles.
His mohawk?
Yes, mohawk. Yeah. No, it's actually his tattoo, sorry. He looks very unique, and, you know, so sort of like, send him an author questionnaire, and, you know, one of the questions is like, do you have any other professions, you know, besides being an artist? And he said, well, I'm also known as Zach Sabbath, an old porn star. And I was like, excuse me? And it's like, here are all my trailers. And it's like, ooh, TMI. But that's something I wouldn't have known otherwise, but we sold a ton of books to the alt-porn community because they have a lot of money, and they were actually very smart and well-read. But that was one that...
Okay, let me get you on that one. Particularly with fiction, you know, it's really hard to sell first fiction to people that don't know you already, because to say that it's a great story,
right?
You know, nonfiction is always easier because it's about something right away. And as we've all been hearing for 2 days, to say what a novel is about is not so easy. You know, figure out ways to do it, but it's not so easy. So, you know, it's often about the beauty of the writing, and that alone, this is a beautifully written book, isn't enough to sell a book.
Right.
So it's often these other interests and platforms play a role. So maybe you could just say a little bit about that, and maybe for people to think about other interests they may have that they can use.
Yeah.
That are there already.
Yeah.
Not to make up.
I mean, I'm guilty of writing like a 20-page author questionnaire. And it's you know, it's that I need to know every single connection that you have in every kind of way, because it's my job as a marketer, as a publicist, to think of any kind of alternative way to spread the word about your book. And it's just as Jeffrey said, you know, or Rob, that, you know, there's no way that I would know that you have a relationship with your local bookstore. But of course, that's going to be one of the questions, because that might be the place where we would host your book launch, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, but those other side things, yeah, something as simple as your alumni newsletter, but also creating, what I've seen more and more is getting the author questionnaire to the author at the time of the contract signing usually gives about 12 months at a minimum for the author to really be thinking about, you know, where have I been on my journey? And what are the things that I can do to kind of connect with those networks that I've had in the past? You know, I've worked on so many books, but there's, you know, particularly with literary fiction, you know, what I always look for is what is the one angle I can find in the book, or two or three, but even one, I would be grateful for, to go for a niche community. There's a book that I'm working on right now with Algonquin Books, which is one of the imprints of Workman, and it's a book called The Art Forger, and it's an indie. It's the number one indie next pick, which is from the, you know, independent booksellers, and it's gotten a lot of praise and a lot of attention. But you know, at the very core of it is it's completely fiction. But there is something about art forgery in it. So it's actually not anything from the author's history, and it is not her first novel, but it's actually looking at this, like all of a sudden I'm working with art forgery, and I see art forgery in the news every single day. I never even noticed that it was there, right? But there is something for me to go on and to use some kind of different angle in my marketing.
Kate and I were involved with a book once. I have to confess, I'm forgetting now if it was the author or one of the characters in the book who was a nurse. Maybe both.
Yes, the leprechaun.
Yes, that's right. And so there was a lot of outreach done to nursing communities online.
Right. Well, yes. Now, the author was a retired nurse.
That's right.
So there wasn't even a nurse in the book itself, but it was published by Bellevue Literary Press, so it did have definitely a medical theme to it. And so we did reach out to all of these nurses' organizations. Nurses, like teachers, are a strong, plentiful force. So they like to get behind each other. And even though this author, she was a debut novelist, even though she was a retired nurse, she still was connected with that community. She was still part of alumni newsletters. She was still connected and could speak to her novel and what it meant from the perspective of healing and healthcare. And we were able to have her write a piece and to get, you know, quite a bit of attention in that community. This is literary fiction that takes place in South Africa. It really, it's a leap, but you know, our job as marketers, especially for literary fiction, is to go with anything that we can.
Right, so if you are a power knitter, if you raise iguanas, you lacto-ferment, anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or it could be really straightforward, like Chris Beha, who was just here. The theme of, you know, the themes of his book are all about lapsed Catholicism and also conversion to Catholicism. So we did a lot of outreach to Catholic presses and Catholic intellectuals, and we got amazing reviews from those places that you wouldn't normally get a standard review from, and it sold very well in the Catholic communities. Yeah.
Maybe this would be a good time to open up to questions. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier on, I mean, just generally getting involved with literary communities online, and good mediums was one place you mentioned. Are there other places that we should know about?
Questions about, are there other online communities, such as Goodreads, that would be generally good to know about?
Well, I mean, Goodreads is fantastic and is great as a reader and a writer, and I would definitely say if you haven't gone there, go there today. and sign up. And a great first exercise to do is to look at your bookshelves and look at the books that are like the most worn out, the ones that are really, really beaten up, and go write a review of those on Goodreads. It's a great way to just like immediately get engaged and get involved. I would say it's more about reading literary blogs,
yeah.
And less about social media literary communities. I mean, there's quite a bit, you know, there, you mentioned Tumblr, and Tumblr is
Tumblr.
Really great for the book community.
What sort of literary blogs just popped to mind?
Maud Newton.
Sorry?
Maud Newton.
She's great. Yeah.
Follow Maud.
Yeah, and by the way, if you know of any one literary blog, they all have something called a blog roll.
Yeah, they'll link you. I like the Millions a lot. There's a lot of great stuff on the Millions.
Ron Hogan. He's more newsy, but Maud is very engaged.
Also, a number of the indie bookstores have great blogs as well.
I don't want to follow Housing Works.
There you go. Such as Housing
Works. You like Wales.
But they also will link to other blogs they like.
Yeah.
Well.
I'm
so finding one will immediately find you 24.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, we have one. The Paris Review has a really good one.
Oh,
Electric Literature.
Page Turner at the Times.
Yeah.
Electric Lit does a lot of coverage of readings in the city also. They have some army of interns armed with cameras.
Yeah, every single, it does, not their own. I mean, they come to all my
readings
and cover it. It's amazing.
And I should say, we're, it's not a blog, but on Twitter, if you follow at CLMP, all we do ever, and we occasionally put things out directly, but we mostly simply retweet things from indie publishers. So that's a sort of easy way to get a taste of things about the community. And then go ahead and follow the ones that, you know, where that individual thing is interesting to you, and follow them forever.
Mm-hmm.
Another question? Yeah. Question is about how often you use hashtags, and maybe I'll ask Kate if you just to define for those who don't know what a hashtag is.
Yeah, so a hashtag is a number symbol, that you basically, it's a running, you can sort on Twitter via hashtag around something that's usually called a trending topic. So like obviously.
Philip Roth is number one today.
Yeah.
Really?
Most people on Twitter don't know how to use hashtags.
Because Philip Roth announced today that he was retiring. So literally, Philip Roth is the number one trending thing in New York City.
That's exciting. That's cool. Usually it's election, you know, or something that's like happening in the world, or Honey Boo Boo, or whatever is like, in popular sphere. So
basically,
there's games too, though.
Everyone
here
should write about
actually,
Honey Boo Boo and then get followers.
Oh, God. If you write about Honey Boo Boo, but there's a lot of games too, and actually the literary Twitter community is like really into hashtag games. There's just one called Literary Restaurants. We did the things they curried. Thank you. And there's been like jokey stuff like that. A lot of it is
puns
and things like that. But that's a really easy way to jump in. Also, but it's supposed to be a way to organize and search tweets. Don't hashtag.
Right. So basically, the
at
symbol is used for your handle, your nickname, and hashtags are used for things, concepts, names that are not an actual address.
We've done hashtags for events. Like if people are tweeting at events, we'll be like, oh, this is the tag, and then it's an easy way for people to see what other people are saying.
You'll see that, like for Brooklyn Book Festival, we'll have hashtag for that year. For any kind of event. Festival or any kind of larger thing, I think usually it warrants its own hashtag so that everyone can just follow each other. Especially you'll see that if you're at a literary writers conference or something like that that's very tech focused. There's also something called Friday Reads, which is just hashtag Friday Reads, and I didn't do it today either. But it's been around now for a very long time. I think as part of the advent of using hashtag to create a dialogue in social media around one theme, and people simply, or not simply, but oftentimes they'll just write what they're reading today.
Right. So, you would, so just
it's
just
great.
Tell us what a line would look like. Let's say you were reading.
I could do mine.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Probably off the top of my head.
And hashtags were actually user invented. Also, like Twitter users invented them, and then Twitter like made them official.
Yeah. Mine was bouncing back and forth between Joe Wenderoth's letters to Wendy's and Stanley Fish's The Art of the Sentence. And weirdly, they dovetail with each other.
But for those who don't know, what would you actually have typed? Just
that's,
like, read off the line.
That's what I would.
That was 140 characters.
Yeah, and then the little hashtag Friday Reads.
So you were like, I was bouncing back between blah blah blah. Hashtag Friday Reads.
Yeah. But like sometimes I just write like the book and the author. But it's another really easy.
So it could be simply a comment about the book, or it could just be the name of the book. But and then you simply throw in. It can start the line, it can end the line, right? Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
just hashtag Friday Reads.
But
hashtag anything. Just.
But if
just
you go search Friday Reads, and you see like there are 15 people that you admire and respect, and they're all saying, you know, Cloud Atlas or Letters to Wendy or you know whatever it is, and you go, okay, if these 15 people I respect are reading this book, there must be something to it.
It also puts like a lot of pressure to make sure you finish a book in a week.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing when you do it like 5 weeks
unless
in a row.
Unless it's like more in
peace.
We have a question.
Yeah, I have a question. Going back to something you were talking about earlier as far as like being authentic when you're on Twitter. Okay, say like me, I'm a music lover, okay, but I'm a writer. I'm not published. I want to be published, right? So I notice if I tweet about music, then I tend to get followers, but then I'm always concerned, like, if I tweet too much about music, then, you know, then I'm concerned about my followers, you know what I mean? And then how do I link that to
but it's,
the writing?
But they're following you. They're not following your. They're not following you as writer. They're following you as person.
Yeah, you're doing the right thing.
You're doing the absolute right thing.
So
like,
I just say consistent.
Yeah,
the more the better.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife has a huge following
because she
writes really vitriolic, you know, and passionate things about politics.
Right, yes, she does.
And
okay.
Her
hashtag Alyssa Chappell.
Yeah, and her fiction is not particularly political, but that's how she engages, is around feminism and, you know, politics.
And
those
people
are
who like music, like books. Like
Yeah, the point is when you
it's
have
not,
a book,
it's not
when
all
you do have a book, you're
interested. Like, it's not all hustle.
I just wonder because I mean, one minute it'll be fine, but then like if I go hardcore Eazy-E one minute, then they're like, whoa, like oh, you know what I mean? Like I just wonder, like, are they still gonna follow me or more followers or less followers?
I think if you're genuine, you're genuine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, every post doesn't have to impress everybody equally.
Right.
I mean, I don't have a Twitter, but I do have a Tumblr, and I started it because I was interested, basically because I you know. It seemed like more and more people were getting on it, and I kind of wanted to know what this thing was all about, and I was curious to see how it worked. But one thing I didn't want to do, and sort of just to, you know, say again what I said before, was I didn't want to turn it into a thing where I'm writing on my Tumblr all day instead of doing the writing that I want to be doing. So I made this rule for myself that basically would have no writing on it. And I one thing that I'm interested in is I really like cover songs. And so I just started going on YouTube and you know when you go down that YouTube hole and you're like, I'm going to look up 17 versions of this cover song?
No, only you know that hole.
It's not, you know that hole. Well, if you don't know that hole, you should, because it's really fun. And if you like a song, why wouldn't you want to hear 20 versions of it? But anyway, so I decided that I would create this Tumblr and basically just archive the stuff as I was finding it. And for the first several months, I was just kind of using it poorly and putting up 30 things a day, and I didn't tell anybody about it, I didn't promote it in any way, because I was really curious to see how Tumblr worked and whether people would find me. And they did. And at first it was a very few, and then it was, you know, maybe, like, I don't know, maybe 70 people follow me now, if even that many. And I'm still not really deeply involved in it, but I've sort of loosen the reins a little bit. I still don't really promote the thing in any way, but I'm sort of out as myself. I've now occasionally linked to, when I have a piece of writing come out, you know, I had a review in The Observer, and so I link to that on the Tumblr. Just because why not? I mean, it's not a conspiracy to not be who I am, but I'm a little more comfortable with the thing, I get it. But to kind of keep it in the spirit of what I was originally doing, I dug out like a cover song that kind of fit with the review. I mean, it was a little tenuous, but it was enough that, in my mind, someone who was ostensibly interested in me could still get what they came to the site for and still learn a little bit about the person behind it. And someone who absolutely doesn't care who I am, what I write, doesn't care about books, can just click on the thing and watch the video and get what they came for and move on with their life. I don't know that it will ever sell me a book or not, but it's fun. It's cool to see what it's cool to see what attracts people's attention. I mean, every once in a while, I put something up there. You know, I dug out this old cover of Dylan doing Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi. It's kind of awful reggae version of it from this. He was trapped in a contract, and so he put out this purposely terrible album to get out of the contract that he wanted nobody to buy. And you know, it's just something I knew. Nobody really else knew. A lot of people don't know about this because, I mean, why would you? But a lot of people reblogged that, and I can only assume that was,
you know. What people are looking for is authenticity. And whatever your authenticity is, I mean, it's really transparent what it is when you see it. You know, that's what we're all looking for. Back to Moby Dick. This guy, Matt Kish, who is a Dayton, Ohio librarian, married to another librarian, had a midlife crisis at the age of 40 and decided, he was inspired by the Pynchon book that I did, to do a drawing for every page of Moby Dick, one a day, for as long as it took him. And I think his copy had 600 pages or something like that. And after about 60 pages, he started posting them to the internet, and it kind of got picked up by Moby Dick fans. And a friend of mine who's an agent saw it and was like, oh my God, Rob needs to see this. And he took it to me, and we contacted him and bought the book before he was halfway through it. It's just sort of this weird obsessive thing that he was posting just because he was in deep into this project. And it was very genuine and crazy. And it kind of rose up through various different weird social media and wound up on my desk. And I was equally obsessed.
So talk about Easy all the time.
Yeah.
I'll talk about one other
draw
work.
Pictures on
them. Obsession is always good. One word that hasn't come up yet, I want to be sure that it does before we finish. And I think we'll stop time for a question or two. No, I think it's okay. websites. Do authors need to have one? If they don't, does having a Tumblr or a blog, something else, take the place? Is it okay to have none of these things? How essential is a website these days?
You have to have something. I don't care if it's a website. Preferably, actually, it would be a website. It would be that you go and you purchase your name. Everyone should just own their domain name. KateTravers.com, I own that site. I don't have anything on it, actually. I think I just have a link to my LinkedIn. I'm not an author. I don't have a platform to promote. That's what I do for you guys. But the thing is there is a Kate Travers who lives in England and is topless frequently, and I come up in search results with her. And I really wanted to make myself distinct. That's actually what was my initial motivation when I first bought the domain name, you know, like 10 years ago. But
it's just like a
and she's still topless. No, she like her antics are unbelievable. Anyway,
you could just post different blouses and tops.
Yeah, suggestions of, you know, please wear this or anything.
There's your pen.
but yeah, no, like, you know, one of the I don't want to get too technical, but like one of something that's really important is that, you know, what do you do when you need to find information? These days, people aren't going to an encyclopedia or a dictionary. They're going to Google. So I go to Google, and I put in someone's name or someone's book title, and, you know, there should be a link that takes me as close as possible to that author, to that book. Oftentimes, you know, the way that algorithms work online, it might be Amazon that comes up first if you already have a published book, or maybe your publisher's website, just because they're probably much more savvy than you, certainly Amazon is. But no matter what, there should be some kind of space that is your name. And, you know, Tumblr is free, but, you know, starting a website, there's tons of free tools, and to buy your domain name costs about $10, if that, a year, through like GoDaddy. Or another one of these services, and I really strongly suggest you definitely have a place.
So if I'm getting this right, you're saying that having any kind of presence at all online would be better than sending $200 to the
who's who directory of literati in America.
Oh. I didn't say that. No, I absolutely say that and would stand up on the table
yeah, really
and shout it to the world. Please
just
don't do that.
Basic
yeah.
information. Just like a really, you know, I frequently search authors that I'm taking stories from just to see what their deal is. Just any kind of basic information. And then you can have more expensive, like your Facebook page can have a lot more information.
Yeah,
I mean, just links on.
Yeah, even if it's just a landing page for your Facebook and your Twitter, and there's a it's nice to have an archive too. I think for a lot of people of events and you know eventually events and what you've been published and stuff. But I would agree. Just go ahead and I didn't buy my domain name, and it's owned by a real estate agent in South Carolina. So,
yeah, I mean, so that's why I've been sending all that.
There's a bunch of Amanda Bullocks.
I think we have time for one final question. Yes.
Do you know the best mechanisms to use to create a website?
The best mechanisms to use to create a website.
WordPress is very easy. The Moby Dick Marathon website is on WordPress.
WordPress
you can also
is
do
free.
That for free.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, though, I don't know if it's the easiest. If you're not already a little savvy, I don't know how easy it is.
Oh, yeah.
But it's
Tumblr
worth,
is really easy.
But you can also, it's like worth paying, you know, a kid, a tech-savvy kid, $100 to do something that looks good.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, because it's a big turn off to have something that looks really cheap. And
There are a number of off-the-shelf products that are kind of fine, you know, $50, $60 that have templates that are really easy to plug basic info in, and they do that stuff for you.
Justin, how did you make your author website?
I mean, I've had mine for almost 10 years now, astounding as that is to say, probably 8 years or something. I had a friend of mine make it for me I didn't have to pay him, but I guess I could have just easily paid somebody. But my demands of the website were very simple. I wanted the most basic HTML humanly possible, and I wanted it set up in a way that even though I don't know any computer code and have no interest in learning any, I could update it on my own, basically by doing he just showed me how to basically do two movements, and that's what I can do. It's a basic, you know, it's a one screen landing page that I can change the background image of when I want to, and it's got a little inset box that has like the most three recent things I did, and I know how to make one line of code, which is like how to write, you know, ahref, you know, links to that thing I did, and then type the title of the thing, and then it takes you there, and when stuff's not new anymore, I can move it off that page and onto another one. You know, the archive. And that's all I've ever wanted it to do, and that's all it does. And over the years, I mean, I've added the most rudimentary things to it. I mean, as my books came out, I made, I think, like one page for each of them just to log, you know, nice clips that people said and stuff. But even that, I don't really know how I did it. I just copied and pasted the design that he'd made me for the first page and then put it in a new text thing and just took out all, you know. So, and it's been very nice to have. I mean, when I was first starting out, you know, trying really to sell myself as kind of a book reviewer and do that kind of thing, it was nice to have the website as a way when you were pitching an editor, you know, you craft your pitch and you write your little one paragraph thing, this is who I am, this is why I want to do this, to just say at the bottom, if you want to see samples of my work, you can get to everything from, and then you give them, you know, the one website name and then they can sort of go look around if they want to. Over the years, you know, the website has become much more of a kind of, I'm going to use the word, archive. I try to keep, you know, I keep an events page, I try to keep it current. The truth is I forget about it sometimes for months at a time because I usually mention the events on Facebook if I think of it, you know, usually when they're about to happen. Other than that, they're in my Google Calendar. So, you know, every once in a while I'll go add them to the archive, but the website doesn't do much for me in real time, but it does serve as a kind of online CV. And that's very useful if you're meeting a new editor and pitching them on stuff, if you're applying for teaching jobs, as you may want to do at some point. Also for strangers, you know, who don't know you at all, who don't necessarily want to friend you on Facebook, who just, you know, they heard about you from their friend's friend, they saw your book sitting on somebody's toilet tank, they don't really remember who the hell you are or what your book's called. But they've like remembered half of it, and they Googled enough to land somewhere. They find me through my website, and sometimes they do send emails or, you know, and I can look at the numbers. It's, you know, nowadays it's about like I think like 400 or 500 people a month come by. If I publish something big, those numbers will bump up and then drop off again. You know, people hear about you and then they kind of forget. But it's, you know, it's there in case anyone wants it.
I think these days, to kind of exist in the world, you need to have some presence digitally somewhere. And even, you know, that simple function of it's a way for people to send you an email.
Yeah.
Alone is pretty useful, which is different than having to be your friend on Facebook, which is a different kind of commitment on both sides.
I much prefer to get those things via email.
Yeah, Facebook pitch is just the biggest turnoff ever. Mm. And I get those all the time. It's just a cosmic no-no.
In concluding then, I'm going to maybe ask everyone if they have one, give maybe just one quick tip of things that people can do, maybe a free thing that people can do. I will give one to sort of get us going, which is that if you do have a book out, in the signature of your own email, mention the book and put a link to it by preferably on the publisher's webpage.
Digital or
anything?
Just...
No, live. Anything.
I guess just reiterate being a good literary citizen, and if you have a book out, help others out. You know, do readings with other people that you want to. And you know, when I do readings, especially in places where there are a lot of readings, like New York, and I have a couple of big names on the reading, I always put one or two people who don't give a lot of readings at all, because the big names are saturated here. And you know, people don't even come out for them necessarily, because they read all the time and they're very known. But someone who you're giving a break to, they're going to bring everybody and their cousin. You know, their entire family is going to come in from wherever just for the, because it's their big break, and they will bring more than, you know, the big name writers.
Yeah, I would say there's so many writers. I'm just always surprised at how many people, you know, don't, you know, are not members or of the mailing list of their local bookstore and library. You know, get to know your hometown, know your surroundings and your literary community, you know, immediately, and start frequenting those outlets. And then separately, just this content thing, I just want to put it out there, because it really has been working. Just thinking about additional content and other material that you can place out there for free, even if it's kind of tips, you know, or additional material that might be of value to other folks.
You know, I work in a bookstore, so obviously I think you should be coming to bookstores. But what Kate said is true. Also, that's what I was going to say, is it goes along. We mentioned Justin Torres earlier. He used to work at McNally Jackson. He did his launch party there. Like, especially in New York, there's so many here, and we're all friendly with each other, and it's great. And also, I know this has been a strange discussion online recently, but I think it's okay to be nice. You're not going to get that far if you're using your Twitter presence to trash a bunch of stuff. If you don't like something, don't talk about it. That's fine. But being a good literary citizen and supporting your peers is supporting people. So talk about stuff you like and go to readings.
I guess the last thought that I have is just to say that trying to get published and publishing and all this stuff, it can feel overwhelming, because it seems like this enormous thing that you have to kind of figure out how to straddle and sort of take it all on. And I just want to say that, in fact, it's not the case. Books happen because very small groups of like-minded people find each other and come into alignment. You know, it's more than anything else, it's about three people. It's about an author writing the best book they possibly can, finding one agent, it only takes one, who really believes in that book and thinks the two of us can make each other some money, we can work together, and then that agent finds one editor, you know? And it's, so the path is narrow, but there are a lot of different ways to take it, and you don't need to impress every agent in creation, every person who's ever used Goodreads, every editor who's out there, you just, you know, if you do what you're doing and sort of proceed in good faith, I think the odds of finding those two or three people who are the steps along that path are actually pretty good. And you know, and sometimes it's a $1 million deal and a cover of the everything, and sometimes it's not. But you know, there's not really a way to game that part of the system. I mean, all you can really do is the thing that I said. So you know, that's, if you can, you know, it maybe take some heart from that, and just worry about it a little bit less.
Also, if you really genuinely are a good literary citizen, a generous reader,
yeah,
as well as a writer, others will then be selling your book, and you don't
oh, yeah.
need to be doing it directly. That's really the real secret in some ways, I think. Thank you all for being here. We're going to take...